Big Billy got picked on at school for things he couldn't change. He tried his best to play it cool, but in the seventh grade, you either fit right in or you don't fit. That's just the cold hard truth. I wish that I'd have been the friend that Billy never knew. I think it's time we come together, you and I can make a change. Maybe we can make a difference, make the world a better place. Look around and love somebody, we've been hateful long enough. Let the good Lord reunite us to this country that we love, undivided.
Yep.
Welcome back.
You gonna go to church or you gonna go to hell?
Top of the second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast is Friday, March 8th, 2024. Speaking of things that we're not supposed to say, there's that image floating around on social media, Dr. Evil, with the little caption that says, "From now on, money laundering will be called foreign aid." And then, you know, you have all of the CIA proxies. Remember that interview Norman Dodd did in 1982 with J. Edward Griffin, where he talked about the State Department had to be captured, and now Gene Sharp is a hero, and USAID, and all of these proxy groups that go around doing the knock and talks beforehand, you know, recon, basically. But they don't know it because, you know, we're just a humanitarian philanthropic outreach group. And maybe, you know, we'll try to make sure that we vaccinate people in advance and war of attrition kind of stuff. Anyway, that's interesting. Along the same lines, there's the thing that floats around, you know, from now on we won't call it conspiracy theory, we'll call it spoiler alerts, right? Because in 6 months, now the cycle is going so fast, we hear shortly after something happens like COVID, you know, it's pretty obvious. I mentioned yesterday, speaking of heuristics and things of that nature, the countermeasures injury compensation program. Remember when I talked about that? The countermeasures injury compensation program, providing compensation for covered serious injuries or deaths that, based on compelling, reliable, valid medical and scientific evidence, are found to be directly caused by the administration or use of a covered countermeasure, or are determined to meet, etc. So, you know, 13,406 claims as of January 1, 2024, 12,854 of which are COVID-19 claims. And this data goes back to 2010. So 96%, upwards of 96% of all of the claims since 2010 are COVID-19 injury claims because of the countermeasure. And this, again, I mean, so this is where it gets real. I mean, how many times have I mentioned the 1919 case, United States versus Babcock? Thank you, Ralph Winterroad, the true seeker of the far north, for pointing our attention to that. Who knows how much of his research has been scattered to the winds, unfortunately. Anyway, he was the one who pointed to that case. United States versus Babcock, 1919. Justice Brandeis, old school bad guy, intriguer, Justice Brandeis, was the guy who said, who opined that, you know, the sort of the derivation of that peculiar phrase about the administrative state, when the state creates rights and individuals against itself, it may withhold all remedy in the courts, or it may provide an administrative remedy. I think that's right. See, it's from memory. It's one of those things where if you start talking about it, then you know, if you just do it, it works. But if you try to explain how you do it, it all breaks down. When the state creates rights, individuals against itself, it is not bound to provide a remedy in the courts. That's what it is. And it may withhold all remedy, or it may provide an administrative remedy and make it exclusive, however mistaken its exercise. I think that's it. Anyway, so he mentions that in pieces, basically. But he prefaces by saying, these general rules are well settled. Which is crazy. So the state, when the state creates rights in individuals against itself, it is not bound to provide a remedy, and it may withhold all remedy, or it may make, may provide an administrative remedy and make it exclusive, however mistaken its exercise. So this is one of those instances of, you know, countermeasures are an administrative remedy. Remedy, obviously, big air quotes, may provide this and make it exclusive, however mistaken its exercise. And 12,854 claims filed in the CSIP program, Countermeasures Injury Compensation Program, clearly is, however, it's evidence of however mistaken its exercise. This is just, you know, I would call it prima facie evidence of the new, kinder, gentler eugenics program that Francis Fukuyama writes about in Our Post-Human Future, Consequences of the Biotechnology Revolution. We can make designer babies, you know. In theory, he says, everyone could have designer babies, or maybe the opposite of that. In practice, we could euthanize a bunch of people and their posterity, you know, using these kinder, gentler eugenics biotechnology methods. Anyway, top of the second hour, phone lines are open. Local 512-248-8252. Toll free 800-313-9443. I think the way that I put it, if you're calling from a cave, basically, usually is what I say. Toll free. Because, you know, we all have long distance, or long distance at no additional charge, I should say. So if you don't have long distance at no additional charge, use the 800 number. Otherwise, please use the local number, because the 800 number costs the network. And again, you know, there's no reason to, it's a listener supported network. There's no reason to burden the listener supported network unduly. It always fascinates me, you know, if in the local community, you know, if there is police abuse and we find that there's some problem, you know, this officer is doing this or that, and the department is sued, and the public or this individual or these parties are compensated. Who pays? I mean, essentially, that victim of some abuse and the broader community are paying for it. And what is that doing in social engineering fashion? What would B.F. Skinner say about that? Operant conditioning. What does operant conditioning teach us? Anything? Goodness sakes. Maybe it's just me. I don't know. So, speaking of that, and the way that our minds are gamed, we should probably play the heuristic clip again. Okay. So, let's prepare that. Let me see. And we can go back to Carlo Cipolla's Five Laws of Human Stupidity. You're not supposed to talk about that either, are you? Can't talk about that. Or the engineering of the zombie horde of stupid people. It's like a badge of honor now, unfortunately. And I know that's kind of a blunt way to put it, but my goodness. Don't you look around from time to time and just think, what if there was an electrical outage for, I don't know, a day, a week? What would you do? What would these people do? You'd be completely helpless. You'd fall to pieces, surely. We live in a society, you know, I've talked about it before. We've gone in a generation, basically, from where it was not uncommon to raise dinner in the front yard or the backyard or the side yard. Whether dinner was on two legs or four legs and or, you know, maybe growing from the soil to now, you know, is there any connection to that? There is for a few, but in the cases that I'm aware of, outside of, let's say, the Anabaptist community, it's folks who have relearned these things, not had them passed down from generation to generation. And again, speaking of war, one of the first things you do in war is you try to disrupt the supply of food and water. Then you introduce propaganda, you engage in a concerted hearts and minds campaign, try to win some of them over, and usually that's evidence of something that's percolating below the surface before it rises above the surface, and then you have the holographic network, as Jordan Peterson put it in a different context, but it aligns perfectly with Frank Kitson's low-intensity operations, the counter gang. Anyway, let's go to the phones real quick, and we'll do that first before we play the clip. Dave in New York, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Hello, Chris. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. Good morning.
Yeah, I appreciated your James Corbett 9/11 thing. That's very telling. I don't think that people got bits and pieces of the story all sent to them in some fashion, and I think they believed their master for years and continued to. A few things in there probably weren't ever given, and this is the era of non-reporting that was talked about by some different people who have the Operation Restoration Project, this Mickey Klein mentioned. It's very important, the non-reporting, but also the AI's role in mind control and how they present information. And I'm sure it's extremely sophisticated. The fact that we know about mind control, we know about AI now, is merely because I would project that that we're asked to use it. So this is the end implementation. It's kind of like back integrating your manufacturing process. And,
right.
You know, like you manufacture something and then the raw material, you buy that, you buy the supplier of that raw material, and you buy the guy who digs it out of the ground. So, yeah. So that was very interesting. Regarding McCullough, they said that he stepped down. Well, you know, they could be doing some sort of a fraudulent legal thing in a sense where, what they've done is they have a legal system where if they send him a letter and he doesn't respond and reject it, he doesn't return the process to them, they can say that he consented.
Yeah.
So that's the foot they may be stepping on. I'm sure they could lie if they had to, totally lie if they had to. But, you know, so, but one of the things in the 9/11 thing, the dancing Israelis, Now, if I got this right, Fetzer mentioned, I think yesterday or the day before, that this was an that there was an old video of Palestinians uprising that they used. And I don't know the identity of that video. I don't know if what we're seeing today is what we saw then, you know, what's in the archives and what's in the Wayback Machine. So we're living in such a virtual reality, it's hard to know a lot of things or research them, especially if you didn't investigate them at the time. And that's something right. I mentioned to people is investigate it now. You're not going to have the information later. And they are just in total denial. So that they don't do that homework. And then they become trapped. Other things that have been said, the election was stolen in 2020. You know, I brought up the point. I don't see the proof. I don't see an audit. I don't see, you know, any sort of reasonable absolute proof. But people come out with a lot of information, but I think it really needs to be put together and investigated carefully. As well, so, I must say that I didn't look at all their information either. So I'm not.
Can I speak to that?
Yeah.
Do you mind
if
I just comment on that real quick? I don't want to. You're on a roll, so.
Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
I call that a limited hangout because there's so much evidence over the last 50 plus years, that really every election is gamed. My favorite example that I mentioned recently is the national election pool. I never hear anyone talk about this. I always say this every time I mention it. I say that I heard about it from the late, great Jack Otto, who talked about the Voter News Service, which was the last iteration before the national election pool. There's this agency, this organization, this consortium, they call it, that dates back several decades, actually. It just keeps getting rebranded. It's currently called the National Election Pool. It's a group of news organizations that supposedly are responsible for gathering exit poll data in order to project winners of races. Well, this is the group that is allegedly responsible for pushing out the numbers in all of the elections that we see. When you see the ticker on your local news of such and such candidate, you know, X percentage of vote, X number of votes, before a single poll has closed or a single vote counted, you know, 9, 10 a.m. in the morning, we see these numbers. They allegedly come from this organization. Well, how do they do that with perfect accuracy? If you go to the Wikipedia entry for the National Election Pool, it says, I don't want to misquote it, it says, if the interwebs will cooperate for me. Waiting. While I wait, it says, well, here it is. The organizers of the pool say that the purpose of their quick collection of exit poll data is not to determine if an election is flawed, but rather to project winners of races. Despite past problems, and this system has been in place since 2003, but it's really just a rebranding of the Voter News Service because of the scandal that it represented. Anyway, despite past problems, they note that none of their members has incorrectly called a winner since the current system was put in place. So how do they manage to gather exit poll data that perfectly represents the vote count that we see the night of, the next morning, the next day, whatever? How is it possible that they can predict with perfect accuracy for 20 years winners of elections? Doesn't that sound strange? It does to me.
Yeah, well,
So they're telling us who we're voting for before we go to the polls.
Oh, yeah, that's terrible. They should never give results before the election is over at all. Really.
How is it possible to predict with perfect accuracy for 20 years? Anyway,
yeah,
we are headed to a break. Stick around, folks. We'll be right back after this short break.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork raised the way nature intended.
Before we press on, Dave.
Yeah, I think deception is what comes to my mind right now. Deception. Mm-hmm. Because this is what happened in the garden. And this is what I explained to somebody the other day. Is that Amen. There's a great amount of deception going on. I would say the AI preceded, or something even higher than AI, preceded all lots of events. And I don't know how long back it has gone on with, let's just say, if there are beings that are above us who've been living a long time, right? So we can see the engineering of people's minds and deception and beliefs, especially if you look at the Capitol riots in 1889 angles by Wu's News. That was an analysis of, I mean, sure, maybe there's 18,000 hours, I don't know how many hours, worth of video from the J6 events outside the Capitol, inside the Capitol. But, and they have admittedly used selected amounts of that, but I would say that many times they showed things that were very, very short clips or photographs in the media, and they showed the background to it, and they showed that, after watching that and his analysis and all identification of the people, it's pretty clear that this was highly staged, much more staged than I could have imagined. And he also shines a negative light on Trump, O'Keefe, and Alex Jones as actors there. Now, of course, Alex Jones gets ridiculous, and we know that. I mean, pretty obvious to me, he has lots of people with lots of good information, who knows if they're real or plants, but he then goes off in ridiculous rants, and anyone on the liberal bend will just call him ridiculous and discount this. And I turned him off one day once he did that. I said, this is crazy. So this staging is very, very big. And so I have to ask if everything I'm seeing is staged. I mean, you could even ask, is McCullough staged? Now, I mean, you could ask that. You should probably ask that. This whole thing about Big Mike and Mike, you know, is it Michelle or Mike? Is it a man or woman? I don't think we don't have definitive proof. We have suggestions and we have narratives. And I'd be very careful projecting that to people. I did ask people, and they said, no, definitely not. Definitely not a man. So, why project? These ideas are fed to people to make all their ideas that they ever say look silly to someone, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. What are your comments? And, I mean, isn't it obvious to us, at least?
Yeah,
what do you think?
I think you're right. You know, there is a strategy underway to discredit message by way of discredited messenger, and anyone associated with the message of the discredited messenger, the Judas goat, which is ironic. You know, the gentleman you mentioned has, on more than one occasion, talked about the Judas goat, which is, you know, I mean, the best Judas goats, by the way, are those that don't know they are.
Obviously. Do you mean Who's News Guy? The Who's News Guy?
No.
Oh, a guy I mentioned. I don't know who.
Yeah. Okay. Alex Jones.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, the sensational stuff, obviously, whatever truth is mentioned is lost because of the things that are sensational and the things that can't be verified. If you, you know, if you're really trying to help inform people to their betterment and the betterment of posterity, then the way to do that is not through theatrics, not to be a, what's the term? A performance artist?
Yeah.
Don't be a performance artist.
Right.
So, I think there's definitely something to that. I think your assessment of artificial intelligence is pretty spot on. And, you know, what we're getting now is the tried and true stuff. And like you said, we're supposed to be basically feeding it big data because, you know, machine learning can only learn based on large quantities of data. And the irony on that, apparently, in one sense that I'm learning about, I guess, is garbage in, garbage out. So apparently a dumbed down, docile, gullible population that really has no agency or will or thoughts of its own is not a good modeling cross-section for machine learning. So there's some irony there, I think.
Hey, Chris, did you watch that Capitol riots in 89 angles by Wu's News? Did you happen to watch that? There's two versions.
No.
You might be interested. There's an hour and 15 and a two-hour, almost two-hour.
And speaking of that, you know, 18,000 hours is a way to hide a needle in a haystack. Because who has time to pour through, you know, 18,000 hours? Even if, you know, 1,000 of us grabbed 18 hours apiece, still, that's a big ask. Stick around, folks. We'll be right back.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news. Real talk. Real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com. Or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new Ease-Off Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The Ease-Off lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the Ease-Off? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my Ease-Off?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. Ease-Off LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Health Simple with Colorado Shioji. Fact bit number one. What goes in must come out. Whatever we ingest, breathe in, or transfer by contact must be expelled. Expelled directly as burned calories, through perspiration, respiration, or expelled via urinary and gastric channels. Every element that is not properly used or removed by our bodies become toxins. And toxins, as we know, are causal to every disease and ailment. Toxins are what makes us subpar, unable to be at our best. Be your healthy best by cleansing your body of daily and deeply embedded toxins. Live stronger, and we hope live longer. Shilajit, legit Shilajit, that is, like Colorado Shilajit, is perhaps the greatest homeopathic whole body remover of toxins made by Mother Earth.
Look for the Gold Mountain and Medical Symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
Reluctantly crouched at the starting line. Engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up. Churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank. Fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty, except for one man still driving and striving as fast as he can. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up. And long ago somebody left with the cup. But he's driving and striving and hugging the turns and thinking of someone for whom he still burns. He's going the distance, he's going for speed. She's all alone in a time of need. Because he's racing and pacing and plotting the course. He's fighting and fighting and riding on his horse. He's going the distance.
Welcome back. Bottom of the second hour. Dave, you still there?
Oh, yes, I am, Chris. Yes.
The way. Go ahead.
Actually, I sent the Capitol riots a video to someone to watch, and they were initially rejecting even looking at it and stuff. And then eventually they said the ADL recommends that no one watches anything on BitChute, so I'm not going to watch it. Basically, they said my response was simple. They are not God. And this is the thing. The guy purports to believe in God, but he is following some organization. He doesn't have any idea. that this organization may be doing crazy things. But so I don't know how. I think that was a brilliant response. I don't think it came from me, you know, but there's a huge problem here. And so but that's fine. People, we don't know the full truth at all. I mean, the amount we may have peeled back the outside of the layer of the onion, you know, Chris. I mean, think about it seriously. So we all have to be humble in that way. Now, there was a time, a day when you were talking about scriptures and perverted scriptures and alterations, and I thought that discussion was very interesting and enlightening to me. I hadn't heard
that's a to be continued, by the way. I need to circle back around, and I feel like, you know, I need to continue that and maybe offer more explanation. I don't know. To be continued.
Yeah, well, I hate to throw out the whole Bible, of course, but I mean, we do need to take a look at this doctrine that, you know, hey, it's the, you know, all scripture is given by inspiration of God. Well, I ask him simply, where does it say what the scripture is? It doesn't say it's the 66 books in the first place. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so, I mean, your logic, it doesn't go over too well in church when I mention that, but I mean, it's simple logic. Yeah. I mean, isn't it?
Yeah.
It came to me at some point, right? So I had this guy call your show to talk specifically because he knows this stuff, and he
right.
found something he disagreed with you on, and then you guys talked, and that was, you know, whatever it was. To me, whoever founded the country, whether it was founded on godly principles, how much it was and how much it wasn't, is all maybe interesting. I kind of don't care a lot. There's other things in my mind. But one of the key things is free speech. God allows you to speak freely, but he doesn't allow you to live regardless based on what you said. He doesn't always do that. You know, when they lied to the Holy Spirit, they were struck dead. When you know, this has happened, I think, a number of times in Scripture. I'd like to look back at those examples. But free speech...
That was Acts chapter 5, Ananias and Sapphira.
Yeah, you can lie. Mm-hmm. You can do all kinds of bad things with your speech. And what did Jesus say about your speech? Every word will be examined. You'll give
every
an account for every word. Yeah, mm-hmm. every idle
yep.
word. So
we'll give account.
So what's an idle word? Why don't we study that? And why don't we control our own speech? You know, why don't we look at that? And that's an area where I think I need to look. So Chris, thanks for your time. But
I have a question. I appreciate your call, Dave.
Yeah.
You know, so I did apologize, and I still need to respond to you. I need to circle back around and respond because you sent me some messages and stuff.
I did.
As a result of Pastor Earl Wallace's call, that's what you alluded to. Some people listening,
yeah.
faithful listeners, I'm sure, know, but just for posterity's sake, there was that call, and, you know, I was a little heavy-handed after the call, but I was, you know, honestly, I was disappointed because I was hoping that we could have a conversation. You just spoke at length, uninterrupted. I didn't interrupt you. Now I'm saying
right.
something, you're listening. I was hoping that we could do that, and he was very...
Exactly, that was a fault in that discussion, and I'll admit it. Yep.
I think I understand why he has to do that, because he's so deeply invested in this position. And the thing that I found particularly ironic was when I did just a little bit of background homework, you know, for him to say... When he called in, and I agreed with his assessment, he said that, you know, I forget exactly how he put it. This was back on the 9th of last month, I believe, when he called in. And, you know, we were talking about the founders because, you know, as you again alluded, since the beginning of this year, that's one of the things that I've really tried to hit hard, because I think, you know, you said it doesn't matter to you, and I respect that, but for some of us, I think it does maybe matter because of that whole Orwellian idea of who controls the present, controls the past, who controls the past, controls the future, and the way that we view our American founding, which I think is, you know, schizophrenic, and a cause for consternation and conflict, that informs how we view the future and how we, you know, it shapes our behavior and action going forward. That's why I think it's important to me. However, you know, like I said, I respect your, what you said, you know, it doesn't matter to me. That's fine. So I thought it was interesting, you know, because again, this might be a Romans 14 thing, as I usually say, you know, maybe it genuinely doesn't, maybe it doesn't affect you. That's possible. I think I could make the same argument for myself, but because of this broadcast and the nature of this broadcast, I'm trying to unpack this a little bit so that people can maybe search it out for themselves. And so when Pastor Earl Wallace called in and he said that, I forget exactly how he put it, but something along the lines of, you know, we're both Bible believing guys, and that were Ten Commandments. You know, he said America, the problem that we have is that, you know, we have the Ten Commandments, people who have the Ten Commandments value system and those who don't. And he said, I believe we both are Ten Commandments value system people, generally speaking. And I agreed with that, that he and I, you know, share that view. And he said, he said that, you know, he believes that America, either God blesses or judges nations depending primarily upon how they honor Ten Commandments number one and two. And then he said, he unpacked number two, have no God before me. Don't make any graven image or handcrafted image or anything on earth, above earth, any place else. And the irony to me was, as the founding pastor of Liberty Christian Fellowship Church in New York, the logo of Liberty Christian Fellowship Church has the Statue of Liberty and that torch, the Liberty torch in it, which are very esoteric images. There's, you know, it's difficult to argue, I would say impossible, that those don't have esoteric connotations. And to have those depictions in the logo of your church and say that God blesses or judges, he either blesses or judges nations depending on how we honor commandments, Ten Commandments number one and two, and then to explain number two, and have that in your logo of your church, I think is painfully ironic. I mean, if I was going to script something, I couldn't script it any better than that. If I wrote that into a script, I think people would say, that's just not believable. That's going too far. But that's the case. So I would say that is a blatant violation of Ten Commandments number two, that he explained, have no other God before me, don't make any graven image or handcrafted image. And that the Statue of Libertas and the eternal flame of illumination, you know, those have very esoteric connotations. And so that was exactly the point that I was getting at. This is the double-mindedness that we experience when we don't understand our American founding and the humanist nature of it and the forces that were at work. These guys that were deists that said, sure, we believe in a creator, but we just don't want any interference at this point. We believe that he created the earth, but he doesn't intervene or interfere now, and we don't believe in divine revelation or anything like that. It's a very Kabbalistic and Gnostic view that they held. And when we started talking about Jefferson, and he just flat denied reality, that Jefferson carved up his Bible to suit his own needs, and I've articulated that point a few times in subsequent broadcasts, you know, how do you have a conversation about that? You know, the quintessential example that I used was, what's her name? Her PBS installment Marilyn Mellows when she said, based on what Jefferson did and creating what we've come to know as the Jefferson Bible, she said, in short, Mr. Jefferson's Jesus modeled on the ideals of the Enlightenment, which was patently unchristian, by the way, modeled on the ideals of the Enlightenment thinkers of his day, bore a striking resemblance to Jefferson himself. That's what we do. We try to remake God in our own image, repaying the favor of him creating us in his image. So, you know, it's ironic. I feel like that's kind of what Pastor Earl Wallace is doing in defending this position that he has taken staunchly, though I believe in error, and I think the evidence proves it. So he has to reinforce this position that he has taken. I don't have a dog in the fight. You know, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, and I will say I'm wrong, but I haven't put together as much information as he has, and I don't have the Statue of Liberty and the, you know, the seven rays, the crown of seven rays, and the eternal torch in my church logo. So I don't have to defend that. Anyway, any thoughts? Oh, okay. We lost Dave. All right. Well, you know, hopefully that some of that makes sense. This is, you know, this is sort of ground zero of our own American hypocrisy and where the rubber meets the road, I think. It's good stuff, you know. Again, I think Marilyn Mellows put it best, and I used the juxtaposition of Marilyn Mellows' depiction of Jefferson in the Frontline series back in 1998, I think it was. Yeah. 26 years ago in April. Thomas Jefferson and his Bible, the Jefferson Bible, was Jefferson's attempt to extract an authentic Jesus from the gospel accounts. But she concludes, again, Marilyn Mellows concludes, in short, Jefferson's Jesus, and, you know, the things that he wrote, you know, like she observed, who was the Jesus that Jefferson found? He was not the familiar figure of the New Testament. In Jefferson's Bible, there is no account of the beginning and the end of the gospel story. That's problematic. See, this is a figure who's unique on the historical landscape. He shows up and basically he says, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. And immediately, you know, the Jewish leadership is trying to kill him for obvious reasons. Now, this guy's a heretic. Well, he's fulfilling things from the Old Testament that how, you know, they defy fulfillment any other time, place, or in any other time, place, or person. So that's problematic. Now what are you going to do? So there's no account of the beginning or end of the gospel story in Jefferson's carved up version of the Bible. There's no story of the Annunciation, the virgin birth, or the appearance of the angels to the shepherds. The resurrection is not even mentioned. Problematic. So she writes, Jefferson discovered a Jesus who was a great teacher of common sense. His message was the morality of absolute love and service. Its authenticity was not dependent upon the dogma of the Trinity or even the claim that Jesus was uniquely inspired by God. Jefferson saw Jesus as, and she quotes Jefferson, was the letter to Adams, I forget. But, you know, he wrote, Jefferson saw Jesus as a man of illegitimate birth, of a benevolent heart, and an enthusiastic mind who set out without pretensions of divinity, ending in believing them, and was punished capitally for sedition by being gibbeted according to the Roman law. But this reduces him to some great teacher like Buddha. And Helena Blavatsky thought Jesus was a great wise teacher like Buddha. And she was a Satanist. So, and then again, Marilyn Mellows concludes, in short, Jefferson, Mr. Jefferson's Jesus modeled on the ideals of the Enlightenment thinkers of his day. The Enlightenment, as I have noted, is patently unchristian. And by the way, that's one of the things that disappeared from the interwebs. Should we skip the break? Can we do that? If possible, why not? Skip the break, please. Yeah. Okay. Why not? It's Friday. To finish the thought. So when I started talking about this, the history of Christianity, Wikipedia entry mentioned, is this it? Nope, that's not it. The history of Christianity Wikipedia entry includes, yeah, that's it, right? Or it did include, I should say. At the time I started talking about this, there were the two big Wikipedia entries that I mentioned. Just, you know, it's pedestrian history, so anybody can go and look unless it gets revised, and then, of course, things change. But I mentioned that on the History of Christianity Wikipedia entry, under the section titled The Enlightenment, there was this entry that subsequently disappeared. How convenient. The entry that reads, and this is cited, it meets the Wikipedia criteria to be listed. Why was it deleted as unnecessary? So it read, there is a historiographical consensus that the Enlightenment was anti-Christian, anti-church, anti-religious. Those words were removed. There is a historiographical consensus that the Enlightenment was anti-Christian, anti-church, anti-religious. The reason that I mentioned this and why it's so important to say there is a historiographical consensus means that there is no dispute among credentialed historians. No one disagrees with this statement that the Enlightenment was anti-Christian, anti-church, anti-religious. Interesting that that opening sentence of the Enlightenment section of the History of Christianity Wikipedia entry would meet an untimely demise. Funny how that works. So that was one of the things that I mentioned. The other, and so now I just refer to this page that to me is the Streisand effect, where you compare the versions. I have the revision as of 1635, 17 February 2024, compared to revision as of 1636, 17 February 2024, which features the revision in question, or the removal in question, I should say. So that was one Wikipedia entry, and I talked about Spinoza and the influence of Spinoza. There's Rebecca Neuberger Goldstein's article from 2006, the New York Times op-ed, A View of the Truth, Spinoza's Faith and Reason. She wrote, Spinoza's Faith and Reason, you know, because the harbinger in all of this, as I mentioned, in the Declaration of Independence is that phrase, the laws of nature and nature's God. What is that? The laws of nature and nature's God, endowed by their creator. Sure, they agree. You know, Jefferson agrees in a creator, but when it comes to Jesus Christ, what did Jefferson say? What did all those guys say? Yeah, not so much. Well, the Christian gospel obviously revolves around this guy. Jesus said, go into all the world, preach this gospel of the kingdom. Who's the central figure of the gospel, this gospel of the kingdom? praise God that, you know, this partial hardening has occurred, Romans 11:25, so that salvation comes to all mankind. I talk about Genesis 11 when the subject arises. Was God afraid? No, he wasn't nervous at all. Jesus had not arrived yet, and salvation had not come to all mankind, in a manner of speaking. So that's what's going on. He is the central figure of history. The Christian gospel is Jesus Christ, obviously. Salvation has come to all mankind. So if you're Thomas Jefferson and you don't you think this guy's just a wise teacher, like the Satanists think, can you really call that guy a Christian? No, he didn't call himself a Christian. And because these guys belong to denominational places or whatever, so what? You know, that was a, it's a matter of conventional, whatever. It's just, you know, something that you do so that you can say, well, you know, I'm a member of the whatever. Anyway, Rebecca Neuberger Goldstein wrote, Spinoza's faith and reason as our only hope and redemption is the core of his system, and its consequences reach out in many directions, including the political. Statecraft infused with religion is intrinsically unstable since it must insist on its version of the truth against all others. Funny that. Seems we're experiencing that. And then she writes, the Declaration of Independence, that document first drafted by Thomas Jefferson, softly echoes Spinoza. What do you mean, Rebecca? John Locke, Spinoza's contemporary, is a more obvious influence on Jefferson than Spinoza was, but Locke had himself been influenced by Spinoza's ideas on tolerance, freedom, and democracy. If we can hear Locke's influence in the phrase life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, we can also catch the sound of Spinoza addressing us in Jefferson's appeal to the laws of nature and nature's God. This is the language of Spinoza's universalist religion. Was Jefferson a universal? Oh, that's right, he was. Unitarian universalist guy, which makes no reference to revelation, but rather to ethical truths that can be discovered through human reason. I think she's absolutely right in her assessment. Go where the facts lead. And then, of course, in the natural law Wikipedia entry, there is this little bit. Modern natural law theories took shape in the Age of the Enlightenment. So you put those two things together, and what do you get? The natural law Wikipedia entry, which says modern natural law theories took shape in the Age of the Enlightenment. The laws of nature and nature's God, the Spinozan turn of phrase. This took, that took shape in the Age of the Enlightenment together with that excerpt that went away from the History of Christianity Wikipedia entry. There is a historiographical consensus, in other words, no argument, no dispute, that the Enlightenment was anti-Christian, anti-church, anti-religious. If that's true, then can you genuinely argue that the movers and shakers who influenced our founding were Christian? Now, that is not to say that, you know, the vast majority of Americans weren't. That's a different subject. Anyway, that'll do it for today's broadcast. I hope it was informative, perhaps even edifying. As always, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Don't forget to set your clocks forward over the weekend. Have a great weekend. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
The truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.